Black are gold pants, black are gold pants, black.
Welcome to UberPod 2.0 Blackheart Gold Podcast XL, Blackheart Gold Podcast 40, Maze Pants 8. Everything's all rolling together tonight for Michigan-Iowa week. Patrick Vint joined in a weird convergence of worlds, the streams of time crossing over each other. Yes, I just made a crossing streams reference. Joined by Adam Jacoby, joined by Dave from Maze and Brew. How you guys doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm really interested to. I hope you guys continue talking about your penis sizes, which you guys were doing right before the intro just now. Can you guys?
Well, I've been following the Favre story fairly closely, and I figured that that was actually going to become a a new thing on Twitter.
So, oh, sure.
I'm just trying to keep up with the times. Apparently, it's quite popular with kids these days.
Well, it is Iowa Michigan week. I'm not going to go anywhere near the penis jokes right now. Well, maybe later.
Give it time. Another drink, you'll be fine.
Exactly. It's Iowa Michigan week, and that means that we're all at war.
I hate you.
We all hate each other.
Boo.
I even hate Jacoby this week because I'm so mad about this.
You know what? Fuck you!
Exactly right. So for the Maze Pants listeners, we're joined by Adam Jacoby of CBSSports.com.
He's kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal. He's basically Tom Fornelli's boss.
You know how big of a deal I am now? My penis isn't that big, but it's grown a thumb somehow. I don't know how it happened. But as soon as they hired me.
I think that's chlamydia, man.
No, like I can make it move and everything. I think it's a thumb, because it's only got the one, because fingers have two knuckles, but thumbs only have one.
If you're telling us that you have, a thumbnail there, that's a whole other level of creepy.
I mean, it's growing in. I haven't been there that long, but I think I will have. Do you think, I should style my penis thumbnail?
And so goes the Maze Pants explicit tag.
I could just see the edited version for Maze Pants, just one long bleep. It'll be
yes.
Wonderful.
That's exactly what's going to happen now.
Well, here's a question for you. How much football did you guys get a chance to watch this week? And I was up in Ann Arbor for the thumping that Michigan received from Michigan State this past weekend, so I didn't get as much chance to watch a lot of Big Ten football this week. What did you guys manage to catch?
I caught just about everything. Now, it was in a certain state of inebriation depending on the time of day. But I certainly got plenty in, and I from talking to Jacoby, I think it was pretty much the same on his end. Is that right?
Yeah. I think I put in about 13 or 14 hours when it was all said and done.
Anybody come away that impressed the hell out of you, or is this kind of everything you expected?
Oh, I mean, I think we have to talk about Illinois. Pantsing Penn State. It was 33-13, I think, was the final score.
That was
but it
the
didn't
final.
Even se- it didn't even seem that close. Like, Illinois just took them behind the woodshed.
I would agree completely. It's not very often that I can possibly say this, but Illinois was more impressive against Penn State than Iowa was.
I would agree. Their defense didn't look as good, but I think in terms of overall what they allowed, I think their performance was pretty statistically similar in just about every respect except for points.
The funniest thing about that game, at least just looking at the numbers and how everything kind of stacked up, and the funniest thing about that is that Penn State is just a mash unit right now. I mean, nobody left that game healthy. I mean, they lost another lineman. They lost their starting safety, who's actually a pretty good player.
Yeah,
thank you. And when they started losing players in that game, the game just got completely out of hand. And going forward, man, I don't see how Penn State really rebounds. I mean, I said this a little while back. I don't think they're going to miss a bowl game, but it's definitely something that is now in the conversation. Whereas, before the Illinois game, you would say, yeah, they'll win seven or eight games. They'll go to a bowl game guaranteed. I don't think that's such a lock anymore. I mean, am I off base on that?
No, no, I think not at you're all. Absolutely right. And, I actually think it's more likely than not they won't make a bowl game.
I agree. I think if you look at their schedule going forward and the team they have right now,
yeah.
I'm not seeing three sure wins.
Yeah, I can't pick those out either, and I can't figure out where the heck they're going to get a running game with no offensive line. I mean, Evan Royster had 35 yards against Illinois.
And there was nothing he could do.
Right. I mean, he was shut down the moment he got the ball every time against Illinois. I mean, and they've got some talent. I mean, let's face it, Zook can recruit. I mean, they have some guys who can play, and they might finally have some coordinators who can do something with them. But, you know, when he gets the ball and he's shut down before he gets the line of scrimmage, you can't really expect much from the kid.
Right. No, that's certainly not on him. And, I mean, like, and we've all seen Evan Royster as a very good back already. So it's not like he's gotten worse as a running back. It's the fact that he's got no help. You can't be a good running back just all by yourself.
No, I completely agree. And I mean, in contrast, you look across the field, you look at Illinois. Illinois was better coached in that game. They were better prepared, and they had a freshman quarterback in Nate Steelhuis or whatever the hell you want to pronounce the name as, who looked really
Studebaker.
Good. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Nate
Cadillac Cimarron, whatever the hell you want to call him, he looks really good, and he's got a legit running back in LeSure right next to him. So, I mean, anybody playing Illinois lining up from here forward has right to be afraid. I mean, I had beverages with the guys from 11 Warriors the other night, and they were genuinely shocked at how good Illinois was. They didn't feel that Ohio State mailed it in. They felt that Illinois was a really good football team. And all of a sudden, somebody who we thought was on his way out the door in Ron Zook may actually have a team that's capable of not only salvaging his job, but going to a bowl game and maybe even going to a decent bowl game.
I think so. I think this will save Ron his job at least for a year, probably longer. He might have finally found a group of coordinators who can coach the guys that he can recruit. I think the knock on Zook all along has been excellent motivator, excellent recruiter, not a good game coach.
Yeah.
And if he's handed over the reins like it looks as he has to a couple of coordinators who seem to really know what they're doing, including Paul Petrino, they might have a chance. I mean, they might really be a legitimate team from here on out. And I can't believe I'm saying about a Ron Zook team, but they look a little bit dangerous. But, Dave, we can't let you off the hook that easily, because it was the game of the week. And I mean, yeah, the second biggest story might be the disaster at Penn State. But the biggest story right now seems to be
Purdue versus Northwestern. I can't believe that they
All right, let's hear it. What the hell happened to Michigan?
You know what? I sat down and I've looked through the film again. You know, obviously you go through MGO blogs upon further review. There were three big mistakes. Actually, there were five big mistakes by Denard Robinson, three of which turned into interceptions, two others that probably should have been. And he just didn't look comfortable. The first interception was just a horrible throw where he had all the time in the world to throw it. The second interception, he was just behind on the throw again. The guy was open. And both of those are red zone turnovers. So it's 14 points to leave on the board, assuming that you get in the end zone. Worst case scenario, you at least got six on the board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was one of those games that was inevitable when you have a sophomore quarterback who is really just a first-year starter going up against what is, frankly, a pretty good defense. I mean, I haven't seen a set of linebackers that flowed to the football as well as Michigan State's did. And I did not give enough credit to how good Michigan State's outside linebackers were. Greg Jones was all over the place. He was definitely, you know, an influence on the game. But Michigan said, all right, let's make their outside linebackers beat us, and they did. I mean, they lined up over the defensive ends and were capable of getting back to the middle of the field when Michigan won the middle and capable of getting to the edge to stop Robinson. So offensively, you know, my hat's off to Michigan State. I mean, I think they had a great game plan, but I also got to see my quarterback act like what he is, a sophomore first-year starter.
Do you think that that's going to be kind of clearly the game plan for Iowa is going to be similar because they have the same kind of talent in the front, in defensive front seven especially. You know, contain Robinson, make him throw the ball, make Michigan beat you through the air or with the running backs.
You see, I think Michigan can do some damage with the running backs. I just don't think they've been used particularly well. Number two, Vincent Smith, who if you guys see on the field in third and you know, third and one, third and two, just laugh. Because he's not going to be able to get that extra yard or 2 yards because he's, you know, 4'3", 25 pounds. It's just, for some reason, Rodriguez loves throwing him out there. But if you see a healthy Mike Shaw, number 20, and you see a Stephen Hopkins, who's number 33, is a freshman, basically a wrecking ball. I mean, this kid just balls forward and gains 7 yards. If you see those two guys in the backfield, Michigan will be able to run the football. I think the offensive line is good enough to do that. But like you said, I mean, the difference is if Robinson's forced to pass the ball, you guys have a good enough secondary to make him make some mistakes like he did in the last game against you guys and like he did against Michigan State. So, you know, we'll see. I think it's going to be a little closer to normal because I don't think Michigan's going to play as poorly as they did against Michigan State. But I also think there's a talent upgrade from Michigan State to Iowa overall, not just in any particular, you know, line group. I think your defensive line is much better, but I think Michigan State's linebackers are much better than yours. So
I think that's a fair point.
You know, and that's going to be the big thing. I mean, do you want Adrian Claiborne chasing down Denard Robinson? No. That's just not
right.
That's not good. Would you take your linebackers over Greg Jones chasing down Robinson?
No.
So I think that's going to be the big thing. Michigan State's linebackers won that game because they were over the defensive ends and they were able to cover so much ground. So if you guys maybe go to a nickel package and have enough guys that have some speed to, you know, fill those gaps, fill those holes, then maybe that's one way to do it. But if it's just a straight 3-4 or excuse me, a straight 4-3 where you've got, you know, three linebackers who aren't as athletic as the Michigan State guys, he can make your life, I mean, Denard will make your life miserable, but I don't know necessarily that Michigan has the horses to pull this one out.
I don't know if I was at the creativity to do that, to be completely honest.
And the good news is, strictly from a speed standpoint, maybe not so much an overall skill, but if it's just a matter of athleticism and getting to the right place on the field, Iowa's outside linebackers are pretty damn fast. Jeremiah Hunter, is he a three-year starter now?
He's a three-year starter now.
Yeah.
And, like, he came in with a clearly fake 40 time of, like, 4.5 or something lower than that. But he plays fast. Tyler Nielsen's, you know, a first-year kid. But he hasn't really struggled in coverage or anything like that. So I don't think he's been a liability. Pat, would you say he is by any stretch?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think he's actually improved game to game. I mean, I thought he had an excellent game this past week. Or 2 weeks ago, my apologies. But he really looked pretty good in coverage against Penn State, up against some semi-legitimate wide receivers and tight ends that he had to take care of. But the one thing I hang my hat on when it comes to Michigan is that if your read is the weak side defensive end, if you're going to continue to run the veer, I'm perfectly confident either one of our defensive ends being able to completely shut that down. Whether Denard decides to keep the ball himself or hand it off to Smith, I have no issue with our tackles taking care of the halfback and our defensive ends taking care of Robinson. If as Cook has been talking about this week, it moves more toward a midline option and you have to play off the defensive tackles, I also have no trouble with that because I have Klug and Ballard are fine.
Yeah. Herr Klug is quite good.
Klug is very good.
Did you call him Herr Klug?
Herr Klug.
I kind of like it. Like I'm pretty sure Klug is more Nordic than
it's from Minnesota.
So but you know what? Hair anyway.
Sure. I mean, Germany invaded Norway at one point, right?
Probably.
I think so.
They invaded everywhere.
We kind of got off topic there onto the Iowa-Michigan game. We will let's go back to one thing because I want to talk about it because it's my favorite story from the weekend. I'm talking, of course, about Conversion Gate. Wisconsin 41, Minnesota 23.
One
as Tucky Brewster throws a fit about a 2-point conversion that was, to be completely honest, a real, you know, jackass move by Brett Bielema. Dave, what's your opinion on what Bielema did and how Brewster should have responded?
You know, I mean, if you're 1-5, it doesn't matter. I mean, they got their asses handed to them yet again. I mean, yeah, they scored 14. You know, they got two touchdowns in the final quarter. The game was over. The game was frigging over. And, you know, if you're going to whine about a 2-point conversion, where, I mean, Bielema is a schmuck. I mean, he's proven this over and over again. I remember a few years ago, I mean, he did, what is it, the onside, he kept running the clock down by kicking the ball out of bounds or something like that. I mean, Bielema likes...
Penn State, that's right. That was fantastic.
Yep. He likes to rub people the wrong way. Like, he's just that kind of guy. Like, I mean, and the other thing is that Wisconsin got handled last week. I mean, Michigan State basically ran them out of East Lansing. And if it wasn't for Michigan State turning the ball over twice in the red zone, that score would have been much, much worse. And so for Wisconsin, this is a rivalry game. We're playing for the axe. You know, screw it. Brewster's leaving. I'm not going to have him to kick around anymore. Let's rub it in a little bit. I mean, I think that's just the way he processes this stuff. Either that or he said, you know what, I'm never going to get a chance to practice a 2-point conversion in a real game when it doesn't matter. So why not give it a shot? Personally, I think it's kind of funny, but then again, it's not my team that he did it to.
Yeah,
right. And I think it was hilarious. I when he did it, I thought, wow, that's a total dick move. But I did not expect Brewster to do what Brewster did in response, which was so hilarious. I don't think that Bielema does that to any other coach in the conference. I think he spends a lot of time recruiting Minnesota guys and Brewster trying to recruit Wisconsin guys, and they probably are in the same living rooms all the time, and they probably don't like each other very much. I think that's been established in the past. Back when Bielema sprinted across the field to shake Brewster's hand after that game a couple of years ago, just because Brewster had said he'd be the first one to grab the axe when they won it back. that was so great too. I mean, Bielema is an Iowa guy, so I have a little bit of a soft spot for his hijinks. But the other part being, if I'm Tim, the last thing I do is turn it into like a he has to go to sleep at night and think about the fact that he'd try to go for two against my team thing.
He's going to be it's Brett Bielema. He's going to go to sleep just laughing his ass off about it.
Right.
There's no remorse there. I mean, this is what Bielema does. He's you know, he's a jerk. I mean, and he wouldn't be offended at all in somebody referring to him like that.
I think he'd probably smile ear to ear.
Yeah, because that's what he is. That's what he does. Here's the only thing I didn't like about it, though. I think that his little explanation. Yeah. Well, no. I mean, first of all, the ball hit the receiver in the hands. The play call was fine. But anyway, the only thing I didn't like about it was the fact that when they asked him about it, he just offered up that lame excuse of it was what was on the card. Because if that were the case, then why didn't he go for two the first time that he was up by 25 points in the fourth quarter when they scored their first touchdown?
Yeah.
He didn't do it then, but then the second time that, you know, when he gets back up by 25, then he does it? See, I think that's a little bullshit. I'd rather he just come out and say, hey, look, we wanted to make it 27 points. I really wanted to send a message to him and to my team and to everybody about this is Wisconsin football and this is what we do. Because that's really why he did it. And he might as well just be honest about it rather than, you know, shirk responsibility and put it on this mythical card.
Yeah, but I don't think his point would be that this is Wisconsin football and this is what we do. I think his point would be I don't like him and I wanted to rub it in. Adam, you've watched Iowa throughout the entire Ferentz era. Is there any coach that Kirk would put 55 points on other than Tim Brewster? Is there any coach in the conference?
So you're asking me, like, would he take would he put his foot on the brakes for?
I don't think Iowa beats anybody 55-0, except for the fact that Tim Brewster's involved and Kirk finally said, screw it.
He would do it to Illinois. He would do it to Ron Zook in Illinois.
He might, yeah. Because Zook always steals his recruits.
Yeah.
But I think that there's Bielema doesn't like Brewster, and he's not the only one. It's just that Bielema's more open about it than anybody else is. And it's going to be kind of sad without having Tim around to kick around anymore. I mean, hopefully Mark Mangino is the heir apparent to that job, and you know we can.
Oh God, we can only hope.
we can move from there.
Mangino but, can coach though. Like we can say that we want it right now, but just wait until he beats your ass at TCF by 13 points, and it's like, oh shit, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. Look what I did. Oops. And then he eats all the food in the city and leaves you destitute.
Right. It's like North Korea up there.
It would be. There'd be a demilitarized zone all the way around the stadium.
We've derailed.
Can you imagine a 7XL Kim Jong-il jumpsuit being worn by Mangino? Without any of the buttons visible? Oh, that'd be great.
By the way, lost in the Minnesota-Wisconsin conversion gate fiasco is the fact that Brewster continues to score garbage touchdowns to beat the spread. He did it against USC.
He's got some kind of agreement with Vegas.
You know what? There's a long-standing story in like 80s Nebraska where Osborne would go from town to town to go looking for money or people that were like ranchers that would give cows to the team to like for the training table. Like I'm not kidding. It was like, please give me a cow. Like that was actually his pitch. But
there's so many jokes there. Well, I mean, yeah. Literally, my head is explode.
Yeah, that's how they found Joel Makovica. But
and a lot of dates.
And a lot of dates. Yes. There's a really inappropriate like Lawrence Phillips joke in there somewhere, I'm sure, but I'm not going to.
Too soon.
Too soon. Anyway, but the agreement always was, you keep covering whatever ridiculous spread they put up against you guys, in exchange for which we'll be glad to give you this stuff because we'll make it all up in gambling during the year. And I feel like that might be going on in Minnesota. Like every time that Minnesota's down by, you know, 6 points from the spread, they always score a touchdown with a minute and a half left to cover it. It's terrifying. And as a gambler, I really don't like it very much.
Yeah, because then you're going to have to be like, well, I think I'm going to lay money that Minnesota covers the spread. I have that much trust in Tim Brewster.
Exactly. And that, I don't have any trust in Tim Brewster. I hate Tim Brewster, but actually, I love Tim Brewster.
He's reliable on one specific level. He's reliable on screwing you out of money.
He's like Rich Brooks at Kentucky, who is the king of that.
That and bourbon.
Yeah. Speaking of bourbon, Northwestern finally dropped one.
Yes, thank God.
Against Iowa's most hated rival, Purdue.
So how do we feel about that? How are we supposed to feel about that? Like, one of our enemies just beat one of our other enemies. What, I mean, there's a really significant amount of enmity for both parties involved. This isn't, I think I hate both Northwestern and, of course, Purdue more than Iowa State. So I don't know how to feel about this.
Confused? Conflicted?
A little bit.
I don't know. I mean, the thing to me, I look at that game, and I have no clue how Northwestern decked this one up. I mean, you just look at – was it Persa threw for 300 yards?
Yeah.
But their leading rusher only – Schmidt only had 32 yards rushing.
But that's how Northwestern's played all year, though. I mean, I mm-hmm. – they have no halfback at all, and they don't even attempt to try to run the ball. They're just going to throw for 4 or 5 yards of a pop and call it good.
But it's not like Purdue can run the ball. I mean, Durkin or Turducken or whatever the hell his name is, that third string guy that they got running the football now, and then they put in the freshman Henry. He can't throw the ball worth anything. I mean, he's even worse than Denard Robinson was last year at throwing the football.
This is correct.
And yet, somehow, Purdue finds a way to beat Northwestern at Northwestern. I mean, this is just the classic Northwestern looking ahead, thinking they're better than they are, and forgetting about who came to town.
Well, it's a classic Northwestern move to drop the game that you shouldn't drop. In this case, they really shouldn't be dropping a game to Purdue. The other part of it is, it's a total Doc Saturday, you know, life at the margins game where yeah, you know, you have missed field goals, blocked punts, you know, weird stuff happening to Northwestern, that changes the entire outcome of the game, and there's where you get your 3 points. I mean, you know, when you've got
when you miss two field goals,
you've got, in the fourth quarter, right?
Yep.
Stephen Demos picking up from his stellar citrus ball or whatever the hell game that was on New Year's Day last year.
Yeah, and you got a punt returner dropping a punt, which gives Purdue a short field. I mean, there's that little those little things that happen that were the difference between Purdue losing to, or excuse me, I keep saying that, Northwestern losing to, like, Vanderbilt, that finally went the wrong way for them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that never happens when they play Iowa.
No.
And it will never happen.
Do you think this is just their classic lull the rest of the Big Ten into a false sense of security game? Like, because
that defense
usually,
is pretty bad. I don't know. I mean, that defense is awful.
I'm just saying, there's one of these, I mean, we all know there's one of these games every year, and then lately Northwestern's still been putting up like 8 or 9 wins, you know, often with one against Iowa, and so I'm just worried that we're reading too much into this.
Well, the thing being, though, if Northwestern's going to get to 8 wins, they only have to win, they don't have to go 4-4 in the conference to do that.
Yeah.
Which is totally doable for them. I mean, even if they drop a couple games like this.
Oh, God, their schedule this year?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They miss everybody. Except for Iowa, which they'll probably win anyway.
They got Michigan State, Indiana, that's a win. Penn State.
Win.
A win. Iowa, toss-up. Illinois at Wrigley Field. That could be interesting. They lose to Wisconsin.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I think there's a better chance that they lose to Illinois than they lose to Iowa right now.
I can't make a decision either way on that one. I'd say they're both 50-50.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm looking at that. I'm counting at least, from here forward, say Indiana, Penn State, and one of their last three, Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin, that's three. And then if they pick off Michigan State or pick up an extra one out of their last three, you know, that's 4-4, and yeah, that's a pretty good season for these guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 8-4 is a pretty good year for Northwestern. I can't complain about that. I could.
Especially if I were Roger, I
couldn't complain about that.
Yeah.
Well, there's one other game that we haven't touched on yet, which was just the out-and-out ass-whooping delivered by Ohio State on Indiana. I thought that game might actually be close because Pryor looked like he was dinged up a little bit. Indiana looked like it could actually throw the ball around. And all that did was confirm to me that Ohio State is a really good defense. Really sucks. I don't know which. Somebody explain this to me.
That was a classic Ohio State, we're better than you and we know it, ass kicking. Because first of all, I think that we've been underrating Ohio State's defense for some reason. Because they've, you know, brought everybody back and they're insanely talented, so we shouldn't have, but you could sort of see that coming, because, yeah, Indiana can throw the ball around on Michigan, but against Ohio State's... Yeah, right, exactly. But against Ohio State's back seven? No way. And so I think, yeah, it did confirm that Ohio State's really good, but I don't think it should have been a surprise. I think, I'd have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure that I picked Ohio State to cover in those, you know, Yahoo leagues or whatever.
Yeah, I was still surprised at just how poorly Indiana moved the football. I mean, I know they don't have a running game and they're never going to have one, but I mean, I expected Ohio State to put up some points, but what do you guys think? Do you think Indiana can make a bowl on this? I mean, we've looked at the schedule.
No.
Like, they might. You don't think they're going to be able to eke out 3 more wins?
No. Well, they just lost their starting tailback for the season. What's his name? Six
Wills?
Letters. Yeah.
What you talking about, Willis? Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah. So, no, I don't see, unless they, you know, pull a miracle, I don't see 6 wins there.
I'm not going to lie to you. I haven't watched a minute of Indiana this year. So.
Well, they got Arkansas State this week, so I figured they'd pick up win number 4, but.
Let's get to this week's schedule. We talked a little bit already about Michigan, Iowa. Two other really interesting games here. ESPN Game Day coming to Madison for Ohio State versus Wisconsin.
Oh, there's going to be some heavy drinking there.
So, Dave, we'll start with you. What do you see happening here?
You know, after what I saw was the turd that Wisconsin dropped on the field against East Lansing, I just don't trust that team. And they were my preseason pick to win the Big Ten. I really thought that this was going to be a good team, but they lost too many people on defense. I think Ohio State goes up there and wins by probably 10 points.
Jacoby, what do you think?
You know, I'm same boat. I think on paper, this Wisconsin team should be really good, like a 10 or 11 win team. But, you know, I don't know if you want to blame Bielema or if you want to blame, you know, whoever their offensive coordinator is. But for whatever reason, they are not that good of a team in practice, you know, when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
And I think Ohio State's a good enough team to really punish them for that. So, I mean, I think they can move the ball. Ohio State can. I think Wisconsin's going to have enough trouble running the ball, but Bielema's going to try running the ball so much that it's not going to be a blowout, but, you know, CBS asked me to pick the score on this one, and I said 34-19, Ohio State over Wisconsin, and I don't think it's going to be that close going into the fourth quarter. I think there's going to be some garbage scoring by the Badgers once it's, you know, pretty much in the books. But, no, I think Wisconsin is not on Ohio State's level at this point.
Especially with losing Ballard. I mean, the second he went down, or...
What's his name?
Borland, I'm sorry. Borland, my apologies. As soon as he went down at middle linebacker, that was it. I mean, that defense was already limping around. I mean, Jay Valai was on a gimpy leg, and he's their best member of the secondary. When you lose your middle linebacker, especially somebody who does have the potential to be a first-team All-American, and I really do mean that. He is an incredibly talented linebacker. When you lose somebody like him, your defense is just going to fall off a cliff, especially at that vital a position. I mean, trust me, middle linebackers are important. We don't have one.
So. Yeah, you know, when I was looking at this game earlier this week, I kept thinking, you know, last year at the Horseshoe, Wisconsin should have probably beaten them and got beat on the sort of dumbass stuff that Wisconsin usually gets beat on. But the fact is that that's the dumbass stuff that usually get beat on. I mean, I think it's going to probably happen again, only they'll be at home this time around.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a 10 to 15 point margin for Ohio State, because they're just going to take advantage of every mistake Wisconsin makes, and they won't make nearly as many on their own end.
Yep, totally agree.
They're probably almost equal on paper, but the level of execution on Ohio State is so infinitely better than what you get from Wisconsin. That's just going to be the difference.
Yeah, I think this sort of game is going to prove a pretty material difference between having Jim Tressel running your program and having Brett Bielema run your program.
Yeah, I think that's it. The other really interesting game that we haven't yet touched on, and it's the only reason I'm getting up at 11 o'clock this Saturday.
Yeah.
Michigan State hosting Illinois.
Oh, this one's going to be fun.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell to think about this game at all, because they're both kind of... I don't know what even to think about Illinois itself at this point, clearly, but, you know, Michigan State at 6-0 clearly has a lot of momentum going in their favor. Illinois played tough against everybody and has only lost two teams that are undefeated. So is this the breakthrough for Zucker, or is it going to be Michigan State, you know, continuing to run the table? Jacoby, what do you think?
Well, these two teams are both sort of that nouveau riche sort of good. And, you know, you're sort of expecting them to just start blowing it at any point, because that's what their history is, you know. Yeah. Especially under these coaches. I think D'Antonio's clearly better than John L. Smith or Bobby Williams, but, you know, he's never really had this sort of success at any level before. And Zook, you know, his reputation speaks for itself. So, it's good to have some level of uncertainty about this, because if either team shits the bed and loses by 17 or 20 points here, you can't be surprised. I do think Michigan State wins it, just for the fact that they're at home, and I think that they can at least slow down Illinois' rushing game enough and force, is it Shielhouse?
Shielhouse.
How do you get house out of H-A-A-S-E? A-A doesn't go ow. No. I think if you force him to throw the ball, that Illinois' offense won't run well enough to keep pace with Michigan State's. But I think it's going to be close. I think you're still going to be watching in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it.
You know, I look at this game, and I look at how Illinois started off the year and who they've lost to so far and how they lost them. Illinois is going to be able to run the football. I know it's just a power-type team that will be able to establish some sort of run. And whether or not they can establish any type of, you know, even a short passing game where their quarterback doesn't, you know, cough the ball up three times, I think they're going to be able to get, you know, get some completions and get, you know, the necessary points to win. I think what this game boils down to isn't so much on, you know, what Illinois is going to be able to do offensively. It's whether or not Illinois' defense is as good as, you know, it has the potential to be. I mean, they shut down a really crappy Penn State offense, and maybe we're giving them way too much credit, which I think is probably the case. I mean, when they've gone up against a team with a pulse, they've given up a lot of points. You know, you look at the Ohio State game, you look at Missouri. I think Michigan State probably wins this one by, you know, I like that nice, safe, you know, 7 to 10 point margin. But, I mean, there's a potential that Michigan State just blows them out of the water because Illinois' defense really isn't that good. Michigan State's offense, you are not going to find a better stable of running backs in the conference right now. It's just not going to happen. Those three guys are just jet engines in helmets. They are just...
Whoa. Wisconsin's... What about Wisconsin's running backs?
Well, I'm looking at what's going on between Wisconsin right now and Michigan State, and head-to-head, it wasn't even close. I mean, Michigan State's running backs controlled that game. You know, Clay got a couple of, you know, had a couple of decent runs, but nothing major. He didn't even go over 100 yards in that game. And Michigan State's running backs have just been, I think they've been one of the more dominant groups in the Big Ten this year. Mm-hmm. So you put them against maybe Martez Wilson is the real deal. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of him to really, you know, make that assessment. I don't think he's seen enough of himself to make that assessment. But if they get loose the way that they did against Michigan, which is entirely possible, I mean, Michigan State could win this one by 21 points.
That's true. Now, at the very least, we can agree that Michigan State's and Wisconsin's running backs are the two top units in the Big Ten, correct?
Completely.
Okay. Then we're fighting over minutiae at this point.
Exactly. I mean, I just, it's tomato, tomato. I mean, you know, if you're talking about, you know, percentages or whatever, I mean, I still think that Clay is the best player in the conference right now in terms of his ability and especially after what he did last year, but he just hasn't shown it yet. I've been completely underwhelmed by what Wisconsin has done with him all year long and what he's been able to do himself. Maybe he just bought into his own hype. I don't know. It happens to guys from time to time.
I think what's happening to Clay is what happens to every Wisconsin back after 3 years of getting pounded. It's starting to finally
start to break down. Yeah, I could see that.
He's deigning.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just deigning a little early. It also seems like he's sort of being phased out isn't the right word at all. But I think that Wisconsin's sort of pacing him a little too much because often he's not even the leading carrier, not only by yards, but just by carries on the team, which shouldn't happen. That's a really big mistake by the Wisconsin coaches if he's ever, you know, getting fewer than 20 carries a game. But that's happened at least once, and I think twice. And, I don't see why.
You know, I mean, there could be something behind the scenes, too. I mean, that's the one thing that I'm wondering about with him is whether or not everything is 100% with Clay, because...
You think so?
You know, it's just a gut feeling. I just expected so much more of him. And, I mean, there have been holes that have been opened up in the lines. I mean, you see him, you know, he'll make a burst, but he'll, you know, he just doesn't look right to me right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a gut feeling, and I could be totally wrong. Maybe he, like we said, maybe he is deigning at this point, and maybe they feel they've got somebody great. I mean, you look at the combination Alabama has with Trent Richardson and, you know, Mark Ingram. Yeah. I mean, when you have, you know, option one and option 1A, you're going to play them both. I mean, you look at what happened with Darren McFadden and Felix Jones, I mean, down in Arkansas. They had
Peyton Hillis.
I mean, they had a great combination of backs that they could, you know, just keep rolling them through. So, I mean, maybe that's just part of it. Maybe they think they're different packages that they can run with, you know, with the separate backs, and maybe they're trying to diversify the offense a little too much and lean on Tolson a little bit more and using, you know, more of a straight speed back to do that. Again, I'm just guessing. You guys know Bielema probably a lot better than I do at this point, just because, you know, you hate them. But
no, they're not our rival anymore. We don't get to play them anymore. We get to play Purdue.
Yeah.
No, look, you've used the term deigning, which I think is kind of funny, but hey, look back at the history of the big Wisconsin backs. I mean, Ron Dane kind of faded a little bit as a senior. P.J. Hill fell off the map.
Yeah. Well, it didn't help that he got – was it one or two DUIs?
I think it was six. No, I don't
know. It was a hell of a night. No,
yeah.
Or maybe it was like a DUI and then he got in trouble for something else like right after that. But, I mean
– murder.
Oh, that's right. He murdered people. Why did I think it was drunk driving? It was murder. But, I mean, that was part of it too. But yeah, his, wasn't he a junior and he came out early, but then just fucked it all up immediately?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, even his junior year wasn't that great. It wasn't as good as his sophomore, certainly.
No, I think the Wisconsin style of running between the tackles wears these guys out, especially because they all start playing as freshmen. I mean, they don't. Mm-hmm. You very rarely see a Wisconsin back who gets to, you know, sit on the bench until he's a junior.
Right. Oh, and not only start playing as a freshman, getting like 40 carries.
Yeah.
In a single game as a freshman.
Yeah, and it's gotten even worse under Bielema. I mean, it was bad under Alvarez. It's even worse under Bielema. He finds workhorses and he runs them into the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what you're seeing right now.
Which is just makes no sense to me because Wisconsin recruit decently. They do not recruit to the depth that you need to continually pound the hell out of a big back. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Now the other all Big Ten game this week, Minnesota at Purdue.
Do we still have ties?
I think we can start calling this the battle of who could care less.
The guest coin flipper is general apathy.
Nothing like a Ben Folds reference. We'll throw that in right now. This is a blood match for us Iowa guys because it's our two most hated rivals.
So you're rooting for injuries.
I'm rooting for Al Qaeda.
I'm rooting for Sinkhole myself.
Yes, Sinkhole at Ross Aid, or as we're just calling it, Aid.
at Aid Stadium.
Aid Stadium.
No one would know the difference.
Everyone has Aid Stadium.
AIDS.
Does anybody have anything to talk about in this game? I mean, quite frankly, I won't watch it. I'm sure of that.
I think Minnesota wins it just because this is going to be a classic come down game for Purdue.
I think Ryan Kerrigan breaks Adam Weber in half and eats his spinal column in front of everybody.
I think Kerrigan's the best player on the field on either side of the ball, and therefore I'll take Purdue begrudgingly. But
oh, their offense is so, so bad. At the very least,
but Minnesota is so, so bad.
I know. And the thing of it is, though, Minnesota can move the ball. It's weird. They can get first downs. They can get yardage. But they can't score points. It's the strangest fucking thing. Oh, they can hold the ball. Like, Minnesota is proof that time of possession is a worthless fucking statistic.
Right.
Just completely garbage.
That's absolutely true.
Because those guys usually win time of possession, and, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me, and I don't have the gumption to go looking for them as I'm talking, but I would imagine that they're probably holding the ball for 33, 34 minutes a game on average, but they can't score points worth shit.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to fall on Brewster, of course, but I'd rather have them than, or their offense than Purdue's offense, which was pretty fucking lucky to get to 20 points on Northwestern. And Northwestern's defense isn't that good to begin with. So I have a feeling this is going to end up being something along the lines of like a 17-10, 17-7 win for the Gophers. But
so a classic Big Ten matchup.
Yeah, the sort of thing why the Big Ten Network was invented, to make sure that this never makes it onto ESPN. just put it in the gulag and just let it be there.
All right, boys, we're up to almost an hour here, so final prediction time on the big game of the weekend for the UberPod participants, Iowa, Michigan. Our guest on one site, Jacoby, Mr. CBS.
I actually haven't predicted a score on this one yet, I don't think.
Really?
Wait, did I? Yeah, I did, actually.
so change it.
No. I have predicted 38-27, Iowa. I think that Michigan's in a lot of trouble on defense, specifically at the corner. Dave, like, who are your two corners, the two starting corners coming into this game?
You know, the funny thing is that I don't think cornerbacks are really that big a problem. I mean, I know that sounds so weird to say, and everyone's
who are they?
Well, James Rogers, number 18, he's a senior, you know, he originally was recruited as a wide receiver. He bandied back and forth between wide receiver and cornerback and never played until this year. But the one thing, I've watched him the last six games, and when he was in against Michigan State, he was running stride for stride with Mark Dell. I mean, it was just bizarre. And he's had a couple of really good plays to break up some passes. I mean, he's playing in a soft zone 90% of the time, but he's not that bad. I mean, we've had much worse at Michigan. Just trust me on this one.
Okay.
And on the other side, it's JT Floyd, who is the other cornerback who led the team in tackles the last two games. And the more I watch him, the more I really like watching him play. And I think, I mean, Rogers is never going to be All Big Ten. He's not even going to be honorable mention. He won't even be academic All American. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But I think JT Floyd, who's just a sophomore, has a chance to really develop into something really, really good. The problem is right now is that at safety, we've got a guy with a linebacker's body and linebacker's speed playing safety, and that's in Cameron Gordon. And he's a converted wide receiver. And he missed a lot of assignments, bit on a lot of bad fakes, misplayed a lot of balls. And that's where, you know, the two really, you know, the really big completions over the middle that, you know, weren't touchdowns, not the Mark Dell torching our slow freshman cornerback touchdown, but the other two big ones were all on him. So our problem isn't, I don't see our problem so much anymore as being on the edges of the corners. It's safety play, which just is either going to improve or it's not. I don't have an answer. Or it's at the middle linebacker slot, because we're really playing with 10 men right now as long as Eze is out there. And I hate to say that because I'm sure he's a good kid, but he just hasn't improved. And he's actually going to end up getting replaced this week with Kenny Demons, who actually I thought had the better spring practice and better spring game, and was just shocked that it's taken seven games to get him out on the field. So what it comes down to is if Michigan can get pressure with their front four and be able to, in some ways, slow down Adam Robinson, who is, you know, your only running back. If he gets hurt,
we've got Coker.
Coker? I don't even know her. All right,
shit.
Go ahead.
Did it? sorry, my thing cut out. no, I mean, we've got Coker, the true freshman. And,
yeah.
Like, so, I mean, he's another warm body. But the point I was making is this. I mean, you've got guys who, if you try, the case can be made that they're not horrible. Meanwhile, Iowa has Ricky Stanzi throwing to Marvin McNutt and DJK. There's going to be some blood there.
Oh,
and I think Iowa's going to be able to move the ball and get in the end zone through the air. And probably repeatedly. And also Michigan has this nasty habit, starting with Eze, of having its linebackers moving in the wrong direction and running themselves straight out of the play.
Yep.
You saw it on both Moiaki touchdowns last year. You saw it on both of those big runs by Michigan State just last week. And, you know, Brian made a good point. Some of that is just some really shitty backside pursuit. But the point is, Iowa has proven that they can out-scheme Michigan's linebacking core. And
there are Pop Warner coaches that can out-scheme Michigan's linebacking core. Let's be real clear about that.
Yeah, yeah. And Michigan's secondary is a little dicey. And meanwhile, Iowa has a senior quarterback, senior receiver, and then another junior who might go to the NFL because he's that good this year.
Right.
So, you know, I think Iowa's going to be able to put up a lot of points. Maybe Michigan can put up that many points. I don't think they will. I think it's going to be, you know, like an 11-point game, something, again, probably worth watching for 3.5 or 4 quarters. But I think Iowa can more reliably move the ball in this game, either between the 20s or in the red zone, and that's why I like him more.
You know, and I think anyone who's picking Michigan right now after what we saw against Michigan State is picking them strictly on emotion, and you know, I mean, and that's what it is. I mean, Michigan did not look good. I mean, there are indicators, at least to me, that say that Michigan is going to have a much better game against Iowa than they had against Michigan State.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to play better. I mean, what it comes down to me is that I look at the quality of the receivers that Michigan State had. They're not as good as maybe Iowa's, you know, triplets, but they are pretty good. I think Mark Dell is a legitimate, you know, NFL prospect, and they only got one legitimate passing touchdown, and that was on a freshman cornerback who's not going to see the field again. So there are aspects there where Michigan got killed was in the running game. And if Iowa can establish the running game, then that's where I think Michigan is going to have problems, because Iowa's never going to run a pistol like Indiana is. I've never seen you guys throw the ball around that much. I don't think it's in Ferentz's blood. I think, you know, I literally think a vein in his head would blow open and he'd bleed out.
Here's the thing.
Don't start with ferrets and pistols. That's all I got to say.
And also, here's the thing. Wouldn't the pistol formation with Stanzi and Adam Robinson be really funny to watch?
It would be awful.
It sure would.
We'd call it the musket.
The knife.
The knife.
The knife at the gunfight.
I think it's going to be close. I still think Iowa probably wins this one. I think, like you said, I think it's probably an 11-point game. I think Michigan makes it close, and then probably Iowa adds a patented Stanzi, you know, fourth-quarter drive to put it away. Anywhere between 4 and 11, you know, you got a touchdown variance in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, it, like you said, it's 3.5 quarters. Michigan hangs on there, either a turnover or a punt, and then, you know, Iowa drives down and probably puts the game away. I certainly hope that's not what happens, but from what I've seen, that's probably the most likely outcome. The wild card, at least for Michigan's defense, is going to be whether or not Kenny Demons can step in and even be remotely competent. If he can be remotely competent and actually fill a running lane rather than look at it and then fall backwards, then you know, then that improves Michigan's level of defense so much more, because you're not playing with 10 guys on the field. But I can't tell you how, whether or not that defense is going to be any better. What I can tell you is that Michigan's offense is going to be much, much better. And they're going to put up a lot of I really feel that this is going to be one of those games where Michigan's offense comes back, puts up a lot of points. Like you said, that 27, 31, 35 kind of range right there. I think it's going to take a lot of points to win this game.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, well, I'd say with that, we're pretty much done for the night.
You didn't make a prediction. What is this shit?
I think it's 45-7.
Oh!
No.
Michigan wins by 38.
I think this all week is, I don't think Iowa's front four is going to have any trouble containing the Michigan running game. And without that, without having to use the linebackers to take care of the running game as Michigan State had to do, it only makes it more difficult for Robinson to throw the ball. I think Michigan's offense shuts down even more than they did last week, and we end up with something like 35-14 neighborhood.
The 17-34 game then.
Yeah. Very similar. I think, you know, Iowa's offensive balance is going to be right in line with what Michigan State did last week. And I trust Iowa's passing game far more than I trust Michigan's pass defense. So,
yeah.
I think it's going to probably be another one where, yeah, it's probably close through three quarters, maybe within single digits, and then, you know, Iowa puts up, you know, 10 more in the fourth quarter and finishes it off. But I don't see it being a particularly close game or particularly exciting game.
Well, but points are exciting at least, right?
Well, yeah, except for when they happen at the end when nobody cares.
Details.
Yeah.
Sorry, my thing just cut out again. We're gonna see points, and we're probably gonna break the over, right? What is the over?
The over 59, I think.
Ooh. I don't know if. But my prediction.
Here. I can find it for you here, real quick.
Okay, my prediction was 65, which isn't, and like that. That's sort of on the upper reaches of what I've seen for predictions for the game, and that's still only six points.
53 and a half. I'm sorry.
Oh my God! Over.
That's an over.
Yeah.
That's more likely than not an over. But you know, I don't know how it's going to shake out.
Who knows?
It's going to be a lot of fun, boys.
It could be a lot of fun. And next week, I plan on hearing your tears of unfathomable sadness.
Yeah, I've already cried those out. I got nothing left. After losing Ohio State for, I honestly think since the beginning of time, I'm dried out.
So your eyes are just going to be dry heaving cynicism at this point.
Have you read my site? I'm kidding.
With that,
indeed. Well, Pat, if I may, since you guys started off, I'll close it out. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We will be back on separate podcast next week. Join Adam and Pat for the Blackheart Gold podcast, and join Pat and I for Mes Pantalones at a time to be determined in the future. Thank you very much, everyone. We'll see you soon.